we're one step away from like Kaoshi, will my flight be on time betting, which I'm sure is there.
Don't give them ideas.
Put down $5 now to be entered if your flight don't be on time or not.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with host Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 599, as promised, of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller and Mr. Faz Mahmood. Gentlemen.
Good evening.
Slightly out of sequence, but we got it done.
Yeah, we're here. We're somewhere.
Or we could call it 600 minus one.
Ooh, I like that.
Is there another mathematical way of representing that? I got to think about that now. Yeah. So, news-wise, Delta making a return to Tokyo Narita.
The re-Narita-ing. Re-Narita-ing.
Re-Narita-ing.
Yeah, you can't do it.
Say it three times fast and see what happens.
Can't say it one time slowly. Three times fast. What are we even bothering?
So Delta had given up on Tokyo Narita. They had said, we're going to use those slots. We want to go to Haneda. We want to be all in on Haneda. We don't care about Narita and the connectivity that we have out of there. And they slowly like started dwindling flights, and then they just killed it.
Well, let's be clear. They didn't actually have connectivity there.
They didn't have connectivity. Well, they used to. Back in post-Northwest days, they did. And then it went away.
Yes. And that was because they got access to Haneda.
Yeah.
This was 2019.
Yep.
Delta got the slots for flights it wanted. And it was a big deal because it got them it got the allotments for Seattle, Detroit, Atlanta, Portland, and Honolulu.
Yep. No, it did not get Portland.
Did not get Portland.
Really?
Yeah. It got, they're running with Detroit,
Minneapolis,
Seattle, LA. That was the whole thing. They didn't get all the slots they wanted, and so they retreated on some markets.
And that's when they basically held Portland hostage. Okay.
I'm looking at my notes from it. I wonder what I got wrong, because I have that one as part of it.
They promised Portland they would get Portland Haneda, but they didn't actually get the slot.
Okay.
Or actually, I think they were able to do what they want with the slots. They chose not to use it on Portland.
Well, no, that's the thing, is they can't. That they tried in 2023, after 3 years of running some of them, to move the slots because they wanted the flexibility to move it around, and they couldn't make it work. And when they went to apply to move it, in 2023, United was like, oh, hell no, we want them. And they forced Delta to sort of not do that.
Yeah, there was something when they applied for the last round where they had to prioritize what order they were going to do them in. But
yeah,
it made it seem like they were going to do Portland as a possibility. But at the end, they said no.
So I was reading, I just read the award. Haneda awarded 12 slots against four airlines, American, Delta, Hawaiian, and United. Delta got Haneda, Atlanta, Detroit, Honolulu, Portland, Seattle. And they already had LA and Minneapolis. So you're right, Seth. They did get Portland, but then COVID happened. And they were supposed to start Portland Haneda in March. And then that's when 2020, and that's when it fell apart. So they got a waiver, and that waiver was ending in 2023. And so they then had to come up with a new plan. And they decided to leverage the Portland slot. They said, we won't go to Tokyo at all from Portland unless you give us some other route. And they weren't given that route. And so they gave up on Portland Narita.
So what happened to that slot?
I don't know. That's what I can't figure out right now.
I know United asked for it. I think United maybe got it.
Maybe it was Guam.
It was supposed to be a Houston route per the application, but I guess is that not where American got JFK?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
That's when American got JFK. United wanted Houston and American got JFK.
Because they said that Houston already has a Haneda flight on ANA.
And JFK was such a bigger market that even though it already had service from foreign airlines, having a U.S. airline was better. Now I remember. Yeah.
Yep. So now, after we've gone through that whole rigmarole.
Sorry. Listen, it was 3 years ago, okay?
3 years ago. And now Delta's saying they're back.
Narita's back. Seattle.
Why? I don't understand this.
Because they're losing their control. What little. I have to assume it's that they're losing some of the progress they made in, you know, the beachhead of trying to take over or set up a proper hub in Seattle against Alaska. And now that Alaska can fly long haul with the 787s from and the 330s from Hawaiian, Delta has to bring in service that's actually in demand. And Tokyo's apparently enough. There's actually enough demand there.
But they're doing Haneda.
Yeah, they already have Seattle Haneda.
Like, this makes no sense to me because there's no onward connection flow.
Yeah.
Because they have no one to partner with.
In Japan.
In Japan.
Right.
And, like, presumably they had the numbers when they chose to exit of what the O&D demand out of Narita was.
The only thing I can think, Boz, is that it's onward connections on the West Coast from Seattle. Because I could see... Hey.
You can put more. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say I think Haneda is maybe O&D traffic into Seattle, and I think Narita is maybe connecting flow elsewhere on the West Coast.
Okay, but so Delta inherited a very established operation from Northwest. They in essence told the Japanese market to go f off when they exited. Why would anyone want to fly Delta?
I'm with you.
From the Japan originating or U.S. originating?
Japan originating.
If they sell connecting flow via Seattle to onward markets, plus they underprice package deals in the Japanese market, I think they do okay.
I mean, it's weird that it's one. Like, I would think it would be interesting to me, like, are they forward looking and saying, oh, we're going to turn Narita back into this mini hub for us, connect and flow to wherever?
No, because they've got the joint venture with Korean and Seoul. What?
Yeah.
How would, I mean, they'd have to use their own metal to go onward. And that's not going to happen.
And are the facilities even available to build out a hub again?
Well, they have a slot. I mean, there's a lot of space in Narita.
Narita's got room. Narita's not that full.
I mean, there's other airlines that have entered, so I don't know how much capacity they have.
I wonder if they're looking at like what United's done with some of the Narita to Kaohsiung, the, you know, the 737 type stuff they're doing, and, you know, kind of the Hong Kong onward flow that they've created, and if they're looking at that saying, oh, we could do something like that. Because they've long been rumored, the Delta rumor is still alive, that they're going to serve Singapore out of LA.
But you have to remember something about the South Pacific or the Pacific as a whole. United has a long legacy and history there. Delta has nothing.
Yeah. And they
let Northwest die.
And yeah. They let Northwest die. Yeah.
Yeah. For what it's worth, compared to a decade ago, Narita has the exact same number of departures.
Right, so I don't
August 2026 versus August 2015, and it's 9,300 in both cases.
So they probably don't have capacity to grow.
I think they do. It's not even slot controlled, is it?
It is.
Okay.
It is slot controlled, but I'm not sure it's maxed out, and it's not geographic limited the way Haneda is.
But if the same number of departures as 10 years ago, that tells me it's at the same capacity, which 10 years ago was at capacity.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I wonder if it's
slightly more seats, slightly bigger planes, but yeah.
Yeah, it's probably been a shift to do more regional flying.
Was it a capacity 10 years ago, Buzz?
Yeah, you couldn't just walk into Narita and get slots.
Yeah.
That's why at one point they were talking about building a third runway somewhere.
I'm still talking about that, but that'll never happen.
No.
But Gatwick is going to get its second runway, so you know, it's cool.
Oh, really?
Allegedly.
Is that for real? Is that actually going to happen?
They actually are. They're further along than Heathrow third runway is.
Really? I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Yeah. FAS 2017, 2018, 2019, there were 10% more flights. So it's not full, but it's close.
Okay.
Looking for numbers.
All right. Well, any other thoughts on Delta and Narita?
I think it's got to be for sort of lower priority connections from the West Coast and just trying to... needle Alaska and try to put some pressure on the yields there, because Alaska's finally actually getting established in long haul markets, and that was the one thing Delta was still making good of at their Seattle hub.
But out of Seattle, you have a lot more options in Alaska to connect beyond Seattle. Like, why pick destination wise? Yeah, Delta's operation is not that big in Seattle.
It's bigger than you think. There's a lot of West Coast stuff.
It doesn't have to be that big. It just has to be big enough to feed 300 seats a day, right? I mean,
yeah, but I don't see it. And I think the Delta's starting to stumble between this and the Hong Kong stuff that they've already started from LA. Like, those flights are not going out full. Riyadh is empty. Like,
well, that's not a surprise, but I'm pretty sure someone else is paying for the Riyadh service.
Yeah, possibly, but I think Delta's reached at a tipping point at this. And I think the problem is they didn't plan for growth properly. They were overly focused on Europe and their JV partners. And so now Asia is a big hole for them. And they had a dominant Asia position and they gave it up.
100% agree that this is part of their play and trying to make Asia happen again for Delta, but it's going to be a tough go. I do think that they'll keep the Hobbit. The connections stay in Seoul. This is just a way for them to add capacity to Japan. The other thing is, like, there is growing demand for U.S. into Japan because Japan's still stupid cheap.
Do you think, I mean, just we can end this topic, but like the Narita stuff, Alaska serves Haneda and Narita. They serve Haneda out of Hawaii, and they serve Narita out of Seattle. Do you think it's specifically targeting that, and that they've seen there's been success at Narita for Alaska, and they're just trying to draw away some of that traffic, even if it's connecting traffic? Like it's because, like, to me, if you're going to Japan, if you're going to Tokyo, especially, going to Haneda is so much better. So, like, why wouldn't you
go to Haneda? Unless you're going to the north of Tokyo.
Yeah, okay.
Right, it's like any major city with multiple airports, it depends on where you're really going.
Yeah, but no, Steven's right. The vast majority of traffic benefits from Haneda. If Delta's flights are full, and I don't know that they are, we could do some searching to get the I-94 numbers and get that data and see if we get some reports there. But, like, if those flights are full enough and Japan demand is growing, that would be one reason. Otherwise, it's just to piss Alaska off.
But I think this is mostly out of spite, candidly, because if they need more capacity, they are better off putting larger planes into Haneda than trying to spin up another operation.
They're flying with 330 Neo today.
And they're getting 350-1000s next year.
Yeah.
Or was it this year?
We'll see. On delivery-wise. But I think those are spoken for in other markets. And B, I think you start to run into, like, I think it's a little bit of both, right? Do you need, where can you put that, the value of that traffic? It is a significant risk. I'll grant that. And it's generally lower margin traffic. But
they just seem to be doing a lot of kind of missteps, in my opinion. So we'll see how it plays out for them.
Yeah.
What, I mean, did you guys read the comments that were made at the LA, you know, where the United's LA vice president was speaking to the team locally? Mm-hmm. And I think Nocella was there as well, but they were spoke of having insight on the numbers for LA, Hong Kong. The reason that it's working for United is because of the flights beyond Hong Kong. And they also had insight into the numbers for Delta, and like they're not making money and they're not going to.
So it's just like Delta's burning cash.
Yeah.
But they're going to connect passengers from O'Hare via LA to Hong Kong, you know, and siphon right. American and United traffic. That'd be great. Anyway.
All right. Air India. They have a new CEO.
Formerly of Ethiopian Airlines.
Interesting.
Bold choice. Yeah, I can't pronounce his name, so I'm not going to try. But it's not the current Ethiopian CEO. It's the prior Ethiopian CEO. He did a pretty darn good job setting the carrier up for the success path that it is currently on, both in terms of fleet planning and product and routes and everything else. I think this is probably a strong play. That said, you know, Air India is Air India. So,
yeah.
Good luck, buddy.
Do you think, because it's TCS, right? It's Tata that owns right. Air India. Do you think this actually helps? I mean, we've been hearing Air India say, oh, we're going to become this awesome carrier. We're going to be amazing. And then it's been years now since they made those statements. You know, we're buying a whole new fleet and it's not happening. What do you think? Like, it just doesn't seem like they're becoming a better airline.
Well, the old CEO's leaving, so someone's got to take over.
Someone's got to do the job. He's not gonna.
Right. I mean, like, listen, yes, Air India is still having problems, right? We've still got the investigation ongoing into the Andaman crash.
Yeah.
And I think the most recent was they got a full forensic inspection of the fuel switches and they showed no problems. So that takes away one potential avenue of outside blame, shall we say. They had another incident a week or two ago where a plane, like a bunch of people got injured in turbulence. Are they still finding random planes parked places that they own and have to get rid of? Right. We found a 737, like 200 a couple months ago that they had apparently parked somewhere and forgot about. Right. Like, and it just, they're, an operational mess, and I respect anyone who wants to come in and try to fix that. It's a tough market to do that in.
Yeah. EasyJet has finalized their deal with Apollo.
Showtime, the Apollo. Sorry, my brain.
Is that even on anymore?
My brain? No.
No, with the Showtime at the Apollo.
No, I don't. No, fuck. So this was right. There's Castle Lake and there's Apollo. Apollo seems to have won the deal. Yippee. There's two interesting bits to me. One is that we talked a little bit when this first came up, or when we thought the deal was finalized originally, about what the plans were for the company. And there was discussion and, you know, some theories about it was going to get split up into chunks and sold off to various other airlines, right? Quick and easy, split it up, part it out, take the money and run. It does not appear that that's the plan with Apollo. You know, all subject to change, and consider any statements made in the press to be in the purpose of getting regulatory approval, not necessarily the truth. But they're talking about things like partnering with other airlines and creating connecting flow and going for a more premium experience on board.
Hey, that sounds familiar.
Like, who doesn't, right? But it's the idea that people are going to connect at Gatwick to other airlines from or to or from other airlines for the EasyJet flow is pretty awesome.
That's a word for it.
Is that very different than what Southwest is doing stateside?
No, and it also isn't going to work. Certainly not in volume.
I don't think so, but clearly someone thinks it'll make a difference.
Yeah. I mean, one of the lines written, quote, "This would help EasyJet to link passengers with long-haul operators in cities such as Paris or Geneva, or with Middle Eastern carriers at Gatwick, its home airport." So, EasyJet actually has a major hub in Geneva, too. They wouldn't need to come to... They wouldn't go from Geneva to connect in Gatwick to connect other airlines. You just connect in Geneva. But, like, connecting to a Middle Eastern carrier at Gatwick...
Who would that be? Emirates?
Emirates and Qatar, who both fly to, like, everywhere in the continent also.
To be fair, a connection at Gatwick is probably easier than Heathrow.
Yeah, but you don't have to connect anywhere in London to connect to Qatar or Emirates. You just go to your local airport and they've got a flight there.
Unless you're in Germany.
Okay, fine. But they only have a few.
Okay. I mean, the Geneva comment is kind of weird too. And they actually fly to Paris, or they fly to Paris slash...
I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. It's trying to feed long-haul carriers and go up market is... just really, really weird to me. And like right now, who could they feed? They could pull JetBlue feed. They've already got that.
From the US?
Yeah, they've already got that connection at Gatwick, right? EasyJet has had they're the reason Gatwick runs, I forget what it's called, but they run a fake interline setup where you can basically pay a couple extra bucks separate from the separate tickets, and Gatwick will protect your connection and get your bags transferred, even though the airlines involved don't necessarily work together. There's I forget what the company's called. I can try to look it up here, but there's basically a weird, like, fake interline setup. Dohop? Is it Dohop? Dohop, I think, is the company that does it.
I mean, is this like something like, okay, we're going to fly to Madeira and Tenerife and all the Grand Canary and stuff to Gatwick and then connect people to the Middle East? Is that the thought process? Because those don't have service to the Middle East?
Sure, because those are huge markets. Vacation
to
vacation.
That's what I mean. I'm being facetious.
Yeah.
It sounds like that's what they're hinting at, but it doesn't seem realistic.
But look, I mean, if they only need to move 100 people a day, that's still substantial, because those Middle East flights are still going out reasonably full.
Yeah.
Right. It's not just those. I'd also argue, like, Singapore's and Air India, there's a ton of stuff going out of Gatwick that's not at Heathrow anymore. Right. I think Singapore, Cathay, Air India, and there's a lot of airlines at Gatwick, a lot more now than there were 10 years ago.
Hmm. Yeah. No, listen, there's opportunities to connect. I just think most of those people many of the destinations that EasyJet flies to from there already have service from many of these foreign airlines. And where they don't, you know, is connecting across on EasyJet via London, where, by the way, you need a transit visa, or the electronic, whatever, Is that a better experience than connecting somewhere else in Europe where if you're going to continental Europe, you need the visa, your Schengen visa anyways, so you don't have to deal with the extra paperwork for the UK, and you get connected on one of the existing partners? How many new markets would this open up? It's just a weird business plan or concept of a plan. Who knows how far along it is?
I think you just described every airline, though.
Concept of a plan?
Just a strange plan. That doesn't make sense.
I mean, if there's one reason or one thing to say about Ryanair, it's they've been consistent in not trying to say we're going to sell a premium experience.
Listen, man, you can pay for that extra legroom.
You pay for the extra, but you know that going into it.
Yeah, I have no problem flying on Ryanair within Europe.
That's the thing, is it's consistent, which is odd in the airline business.
They're pretty consistent. When things go wrong, they can go very wrong in a hurry. But they go right more often than not. They fly places. They fly a lot of point-to-point stuff if it works. It's not even necessarily the cheapest, but when it works, especially on some of the random point-to-point stuff, it can be the cheapest.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Who's going to buy the debt, by the way?
So that's the other thing that comes out of this, right? Like, you've got it's being financed. They're trying to issue debt to finance it, which is sort of the private equity playbook. And would you buy debt based on this business plan, knowing what you know about the industry?
No, but someone will.
Someone will. How much, what rate are they going to have to pay it out at? And this is the challenge of it when you saddle a company with a significant amount of additional debt as part of a private equity takeover. Can it ever pay itself off? And airlines, especially, who are already swimming in debt and are going to have to pay a huge capex for all the new planes coming in the near future. Arguably, the play is get the new planes, sell the old ones, because these days, this relatively late model A320 still has some value to it, even a CEO, and play that arbitrage a little bit like what Southwest is doing. As they're taking on new MAX planes, they're selling off some of their older ones, the NGs, and they still have a decent residual value, not as much as the new planes cost, but there's some cash flow play there. But I don't know where this money comes from and how long, what interest rates they're going to have to be paying to cover this transaction and what that's going to cost them long term.
Yeah.
And how long they ride it out.
Yeah, I think someone's going to buy it for sure because they don't really care about the backstory or how airlines work in this business model. But what's the actual cost of that? And maybe EasyJet doesn't really survive this. They just get parted out eventually. So,
or someone will come in and boost up their loyalty program like all the other airlines.
Boost up as in make it better, or boost up as in buy it out?
Make it better and get it generating more revenue.
Really, really hard to do in Europe where you don't have credit card fees.
Just make it like obvious.
No comment.
The MAX 7, 737 MAX 7 is certified.
Boeing can now start selling it.
This is
delivering it. Let's be clear. They sold a bunch of them. They can start delivering.
Southwest being the biggest customer, right?
Yes. And I believe the statement from Southwest at the time or from Boeing at the time was, we're now working on putting in the final fixes on all these planes to get them to be able to start actually delivering, right? So same problem as the 777X, which, by the way, I think we talked about last week, that Emirates said it wasn't going to take its terrible teens. Yep. Lufthansa has also said it's not keen on taking its early frames because of the amount of rework that it expects will be required.
So they're definitely going to United.
But allegedly, United has said they're not interested, but that might just be a negotiating tactic.
That's Kirby speak.
But the sevens need some retrofit, some rework as well, but they are in the process of getting that sorted out so they can start delivering them to Southwest.
Well, what does this mean for the MAX 10? Are we going to see that certification coming next?
Seems likely.
Okay.
I mean, it's the same process, the same workflow. It was a little behind just in terms of test flying and all the stuff. I think we'll see a lot of the bits that went into the 7 program carry over into the 10 program as well.
Yep.
Right. We also have to remember, like, both of them were sort of on the cusp of certification a couple years ago. And there was an issue with, if I remember correctly, de-icing on the front of the engine cowling. And Boeing was like, yeah, we know about that. It's like a problem on the 8s and 9s also. We're just going to put in the fix in a couple years once we get it. But in the meantime, we're going to start delivering new planes. And the FAA was like, or you could fix it first and then deliver the planes. And it was a rare instance where the FAA actually forced Boeing to do something the quote unquote right way, in my mind. Keep in mind, the 8s and 9s still have these problems and still need the same like retrofit work done, but the 7s and 10s will be delivered with it in place.
Details.
But yeah, no, this is good, right? This is a major step for Boeing. It's sort of an albatross off their back, if you will. It's a big step forward for the MAX program. The 10 following, presumably by the end of year's target, I think is a bigger deal because I'd have to check the numbers, but I'm pretty sure there's more 10s pending delivery.
There's a bunch sitting, right? Like waiting.
Well, just, I mean, like overall order book, right? More people want the 10 than want the 7.
I mean, there's just a lot of planes sitting at the different Boeing
like
factories that need to.
But China took all of theirs. That backlog, I think, is clear.
Oh, so they've started moving those planes over to China?
My understanding is those are all pretty much gone now. Like wow. The stuff waiting around is 7s and 10s mostly, not 8s and 9s.
Gotcha. Okay.
That have places to be.
Yeah.
Wow. So.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have a bunch of new Patreon supporters. And for those Patreon supporters, we're going to talk a little bit about AA and Foz's thoughts on them falling apart or being a disaster of an airline, Indigo, and their European lack of plans. We're going to talk about Delta and DraftKings and maybe some other interesting tidbits there that we thought about as we talked offline. So stick around for that if you're a Patreon supporter. Seth, do you want to thank him?
I would. Recent subscribers, Runway 30, Elliot M, Jason T, Randy, Neil P, Bert J, and Jason R. Much appreciated, y'all. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Yep. If you're not a Patreon supporter, thank you for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us. And we will talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.